podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello, welcome to the Analyst Inside Cricket. Simon Mann here with me, Simon Hughes. And we're going to talk this week, as summer seems to have finally arrived, about the general expansion of the game with two specific areas, I suppose, of our focus. One is to celebrate, in a way, the beginning of Ireland's Test career, because they're playing a Test match for the first time on Friday against Pakistan, becoming the 11th Test match country. And then later on in this show, we're going to talk about how to integrate better this vast mass of support that the English game has, or, you know, participation that the English game has in the Asian community. Nearly 40% of all recreational cricketers are Asian, and yet not many of those actually end up in the professional game. So we're going to have a look at that after the break. But first, actually talking about Asians, you've seen Pakistan in action this week. What did you make of them?
Well, I was very impressed with their leg spinner, Shadab Khan. He took 6 wickets in the first innings against Northamptonshire. He does spin the ball a long way. He's only officially 19 years of age. He hasn't played a huge amount of first-class cricket. He really came to the fore playing in the Pakistan Super League because he was taking wickets and he was economical, but he's progressed since then. Obviously, Yasir Shah is injured, which is a setback for Pakistan. You know, an absolute shoe-in for them, even in conditions that, you know, green pitches at this time of year, although the sun is shining at the moment. But he does look a decent talent. And they came to England thinking, oh, not quite sure what we're going to do with our side for the Test match against Ireland. Should we play a spinner? We might just need seamers. But actually, when you think about it, a good leg spinner against a team like Ireland, and even a team like England, who've not played leg spin particularly well, might well be the way to go, rather than just packing your side with pace bowlers.
Yeah, and you look at someone like Shane Warne, who always believed he could take wickets, even in seamer-friendly conditions. And I was at a game the other day, actually, a girls' game, watching a leg spinner, a 15-year-old girl playing for Warwickshire, and she got wickets because she had a googly, even though there was no actual turn. Just by getting one to go straight instead of spinning a little bit away, you know, does cause problems. So ideal. Of course, Pakistan, inexperienced batting lineup in English conditions, and have struggled so far. So that'll be something that the Irish can focus on. And we've got someone on the programme today who will probably give them problems. Tim Murtagh, who will be playing his first Test match at age 36. Great pinnacle of his career. Great excitement for him. And he's been one of the players of the season already, taking a number of wickets at very low cost for Middlesex. He's that sort of batsman's nightmare in April, isn't he? The guy that just nips it around at 75 miles an hour, wobbles it each way, perfect line and length, gets the edge. He's been taking more wickets this weekend for Middlesex down at Sussex. And he's just a classic early season bowler, isn't he?
He is. I suppose the question is, what sort of pitch are they going to want to play that Test match on in Malahola? What sort of pitch actually can they produce? It might well be you just get what you get given, basically. You can't dry it out enough, you know, for it not to be green. I've been there for one-day matches, but admittedly a bit later in the year, where the pitch has actually been quite good for batting at Malahide. But it might well be that they want to have a shootout with their seamers.
I think it will. And if you look at the way that Ireland set their game up, I mean, it is very much guys quite often bowling with the keeper stood up to the stumps. Certainly that happens in Irish club cricket. And any time you play against Ireland, you're expecting bowlers of sort of 75 miles an hour to just wobble it around, give you no pace to work with. And they should stick to what they know, that's their sort of indigenous skill in a way.
The only problem they've got, of course, is that Pakistan have got some useful seamers as well. There's someone called Mohammad Amir, although I wasn't that impressed with him in the first innings at Northampton. He seems to have lost a little bit of his zip. When he gets everything right, it looks magnificent. But it was a bit of inconsistency. I suppose you could say, well, it's the start of a tour. Hasn't bowled a great deal with the red ball of late. There's Hassan Ali as well, Mohammad Abbas and Rahat Ali in their pace bowling battery. So they've got options. So if it is a bit of a shootout, then, you know, it's fair to say Pakistan have got options as well to come back with.
Let's hear from Tim Murtagh, because he's gone past 700 first-class wickets. He's an absolute fulcrum of Middlesex's early season campaign. And what I talked to him about was how he exploits those red ball moments in the early season. And does he mind the fact that there's a lot of white ball cricket suddenly interrupting his progress?
These are the times for a bowler where you kind of cash in and take advantage, because, you know, the wickets have been pretty wet. You know, I think all throughout the country, the amount of rain we've had in the last month's been pretty unprecedented. So, yeah, it's a good time for the bowlers to as I say, take advantage. But, you know, equally, some other years, you know, we've had really nice kind of Easters and Aprils, and the wickets haven't been too bad. So I guess just this year's been particularly wet. You can tell sort of there are certain players that you're playing against in Championship cricket that, you know, if you hang in there long enough and bowl enough dot balls, they're going to make a mistake, because, you know, they're looking to get on and score runs and want to field bat on ball. And, you know, there's not so many players in this day and age who bat a whole day, who'd score 100 in a day.
Do you think there should be a better balance in how the four-day games are spread out during the season?
Yeah, I do. I kind of quite like the 16-game Championship season. I thought that was a kind of a real test of yourself, your techniques, your kind of stamina throughout a year for a bowler. So I actually quite like the kind of uniformity of playing everyone twice. And, you know, this year in this division, we play some teams twice and other teams once. I thought there was space for 16 games in a year, but, you know, that's coming from someone who's not playing a whole lot of white ball cricket as well. So that might be different if I was playing every game.
Is there a feeling amongst the players that, I mean, I noticed Ollie Rayner posted something the other day or today about the fact the players haven't been consulted that much about this new 100 ball tournament.
Yeah.
I mean, you got a view on that?
I guess that tournament will stand out compared to other tournaments. I know a lot of people say T20 cricket works, and, you know, if it's not broke, don't fix it or whatever. But, you know, that's the case at the moment. In 10 years' time, it might not be the case. And I certainly remember in 2003, I was probably one of the few players who was playing when it first came in. And that was a big kind of ridicule then. I remember I was at Surrey then. And it was kind of spoken about in the dressing rooms, a bit of hit and giggle, and, you know, we wouldn't play our full team in those games. And, you know, that's how I got my start, I think, in white ball cricket. I kind of played a lot of T20 games because the club didn't really take it that seriously at the start. So a lot of people criticised that when that first came out, and I think, you know, it's just a case of wait and see. I'm sure it's not a decision that's been made on a whim, and a lot of research and stuff goes into these things, and there are obviously broadcasters' opinions that need to come into it that us as players don't necessarily see. So I can sort of see the bigger picture a little bit as well, and willing to give it a go.
Well, that's Tim Murta. By the way, thanks to everyone who's reviewed or rated this show so far, and if you've enjoyed it, please tell someone you know. Now, interesting comments there from Tim Murta, and it's true, isn't it? When 2020 started in this country, there was a sort of slightly sniffy attitude, oh, that won't work, you know, 20 overs cricket, you know, it'd just be a bit of a circus. And look what it's turned into. The ECB has been criticised, and by players as well. You just sense there's that criticism out there from the players, oh, we weren't consulted, this is a bit of a joke, T20 works. Tim Murta there saying, well, actually, I don't mind it. I don't, you know, no great objections to it. Think back to what it was like when T20 started, and it was, oh, we'd just put out a, you know, we won't put out a proper side for the T20 match. It's amazing how it's changed.
And, you know, people will say, well, the IPL's a circus and it's become sort of too big for its boots and all that. But actually, it still has quite a big impact on the game as a whole, because, you know, it's on every day. I mean, in a way, the model of the IPL is so good for the simple reason that there's a game on every night, and it's on at 8 o'clock at night in India, so sort of 3:30 in England, and you can sort of set your clock by it. You can set your whole day, your day around it. You can orientate you around it, and that's what a lot of Indian people do. And that's, I think, what we need in this country is when the T20 is on, it needs to be on at the same time of day and in a bulk, in a block, like they're planning in the year 2020, to have it in a sort of 5 or 6 week sort of area of the season, so that you can almost exactly know when the game's on and who's playing and follow the whole progress of the tournament. And the other impact it's had is look at the way it's improved the game overall. And England have benefited because they've just gone to what number one ranked ODI team. And there's no doubt that some of the players that have put England into that onto that pedestal at the top of the one-day game have benefited from playing in the IPL and other T20 tournaments around the world.
I don't know if it's just me, but I just sense that this IPL has had a greater interest than anyone before. It might well be just because there are more English players playing in the IPL.
Sure that's right, yeah.
It might be because of that, but it's here to stay, isn't it? And I was watching quite a lot of sport on television last week, and it just struck me that I was watching the two Champions League semi-finals, the Europa League semi-final, and actually the passion of the crowds no different at all from the IPL. It's that same buzz, and in a way, you feel quite envious, I think, as you think of international cricket in England. Occasionally there's that buzz, but it isn't there the whole time.
Well, you know why that is, I think, is because the excitement comes from the players. And if the players look excited and look really passionate about the game they're involved in, that then infiltrates into the crowd and even into the TV audience. I think they cover the IPL well because they focus on the emotions of the players and also the supporters. And there's a lot of very extreme sort of hyperbole used on the show itself, on the commentary, but it sort of evokes what the atmosphere is like. And there's this general buzz around each game. And that's what we need to try and create in our tournament in 2020. Going back to the sort of more traditional game, we were talking about Ireland, you know, becoming the 11th Test nation. And in a funny sort of way, you know, they've actually made a name for themselves in one-day cricket. It's easier for a smaller country to prosper in the one-day format because in a Test match, you know, in the end, the best team wins. You know, over the 4 or 5 days, the talent will out. T20 very much levels up the odds. It's a lottery, really, who's going to win a T20 game. One player.
Is it really?
Well, I think, you know, one player can still come off and change a game in two overs and there's no chance to come back. Whereas in a Test match, you know, you can get bowled out for 100 and still possibly win the game by batting better in the second innings. Look at that fascinating county championship match between Yorkshire and Essex, for instance, where Yorkshire were bowled out for 50 in the first innings and yet made a fantastic game out of it. So, you know, the longer format of the game, the better team will normally win. And I think that my worry with Ireland is you look at their average age for their first Test, and the average age is 32, and they've got 7 players over 30. And really, they peaked in 2011 in that World Cup. We were both there watching England lose to Ireland in Bangalore in the World Cup. Fantastic performance. Most of those players are still playing. That's 7 years later. And I think that's their problem, is they haven't really been able to kick on with their first-class structure, which is really only now coming into play. And therefore, they're not producing enough really talented young players. And, of course, you know, Ed Joyce, age 39, making his Test debut at 39, almost one of the oldest has ever done that. Fascinating.
Yeah, I think he's the oldest, well, certainly the oldest since Omar Henry in the early 90s, who played for South Africa, of course, who had that long time out of cricket. It feels a little bit as if it's come a bit too late for them. The question is actually how much Test cricket they're going to play. I suspect they're not going to play huge amounts. I don't think they're going to play 3-match series, you know, home and away, and they're not going to be part of the Test Championship. So they're going to play a little bit, you know, perhaps a couple of Test matches a year. We'll actually hear from Tim Murtagh in just a moment talking about his Ireland experience. But I think it is just a great moment for them, though, to play a Test match against, as well, a proper established Test match team in Pakistan. You know, we're not talking about playing against Zimbabwe or Afghanistan. You know, this is Pakistan. They've got not as many stars as they used to have, I think it's fair to say. But they are a talented team. They won the Champions Trophy last year, and they could well be in the shake-up for the World Cup next year. So they are an exciting team to play in their first match.
Just in relation to the age of this Irish side, one of the problems they've had building up for this Test match is that now only 3 of them are playing county championship cricket, whereas, you know, probably a couple of years ago, a few more, people like Niall O'Brien and others, Kevin O'Brien, they would have all have been playing county cricket, but they haven't had that opportunity this summer because they're not really required by counties anymore. But that hasn't dimmed Tim Murtagh's excitement for the prospect of playing a Test match.
I thought that chance had gone, you know, a long time ago, I guess. So to actually potentially make my Test debut at 36 and play Ireland's first Test is, you know, massively exciting. you know, the last two or three years we've struggled a bit against, you know, we've obviously had history of beating some good teams in World Cups, and in between times not really had as good of results as we would have liked. But, you know, you look at Bangladesh, their first few years playing Test cricket was a massive struggle. I think even New Zealand before that didn't win a Test match for a long time. Getting that quality of cricket before a Test match is a bit of a struggle. I know they're doing their best, and there's various inter-pro games going on at the moment, and some of us guys are playing county cricket as well. So it's not ideal, but you know, we'll make the best of what we can.
So thanks to Tim Murta for that interview. And actually, he's got a bit of a decision to make, you know, because if he plays in this Test match, which presumably he will, next year he'll be an overseas player for Middlesex. Mm. And they'll have to really weigh that up, whether they can give up an overseas slot to him in preference to perhaps a more famous name. But my God, he's invaluable to Middlesex at the moment. Now, after the break, we're going to look at a different subject, a different area of expansion, how England are going to integrate the Asian community. Welcome back. And just one thought about Irish cricket, actually. I've had a lot of interaction with the Irish over the years. Of course, they had a lot of players from Ireland played for Middlesex, starting with Dermot Monteith, the left-arm spinner in the 1980s. Ed Joyce, of course, played for Middlesex. And Owen Morgan, who came over, and I remember seeing him first when he was about 16, belting it into the trees in a benefit match somewhere in Buckinghamshire. Amazing talents they do produce. But the visits to Ireland I've usually made have been very drink-related. And I always remember playing for Durham, actually, against Ireland in the NatWest Trophy in the 1990s. And we played this match. We had Ian Botham as a sort of travelling supporter because he'd been hit on the foot by Waqar Yunis in a Test match and couldn't actually play. So he was wearing a pair of flip-flops with this broken toe poking out. But that didn't stop him playing golf. So after we'd beaten Ireland, we went off to the golf course and played a round at the K Club. This is Durham against a sort of bunch of the Irish cricketers, and we had the whole kind of almost the freedom of the K Club for that day, and played this wonderful round of golf. And I remember Ian Botham still allowed to play golf in flip-flops, missing a 4-foot putt and whacking his toe in annoyance with his putter, and then screaming in agony because he realised it was his broken toe he'd hit with his putter. We finished up in the bar.
You surprised me.
we finished up in the bar at sort of 9 o'clock after this round of golf. And I always remember going up to this barman at about 2 in the morning when we were still drinking, fantastic evening, and saying to this barman, this is the middle of July, saying to this barman, can you tell me when does this bar close? Because we needed to catch our flight. And he just said, October. We finished up, we left at 6 in the morning for a 9:30 flight from Dublin. And I always remember our captain, David Graveney, who went on to be chairman of selectors, taking with him in the taxi a 3/4 full glass of Guinness, as you do at 6 in the morning, and sitting in the front seat of this cab with the Guinness in between his thighs. And he kept falling asleep on this sort of hour's journey to the airport. And then every 10 minutes, he'd wake up with the sort of turn of the car from round a bend, see his pint of Guinness and just take another sip and then put it back in his thighs again and then carry on. And you know, we did eventually get back to London and caught the flight. And I think Irish cricket has probably changed a bit since then.
That's professional sport, folks.
Anyway, on to slightly more serious topics. And the way that English cricket can integrate this vast mass of support and potential skill, which is the Asian community. 40% of the participants in the amateur domestic game in England are from the South Asian community, and yet only 4% of those players end up in the professional game. And some counties have hardly ever had Asian players, and it's a real shame because there is so much talent there. I mean, I go and watch junior cricket, and I watch, obviously, school cricket, even girls' cricket, and there's lots of talent in the Asian community, natural spinners and wristy batsmen and some good pace bowlers as well, and yet they don't end up in the professional game, and it's exasperating. And, of course, they don't also go to the matches as much as they might do as well to support England, which is their home in many, many cases. And so what's quite encouraging is the ECB have set up this foundation, the National Asian Cricket Council, which is tasked really with trying to sort out this issue and try and get better integration. And, you know, the blame is on both sides. I think sometimes we haven't embraced, or the white community haven't embraced the Asian leagues enough. There's still an awful lot of Asian leagues going on Sundays, which aren't really part of the traditional game, and they play on sort of park pitches, and they manage with very, very poor facilities, and they keep going, and there's a lot of talent going on there. But I also think sometimes Asian clubs haven't been that good about embracing the white community. And you look at a club like Indian Gymkhana, fantastic.
Who are based in London.
Who are based in London, you know, fantastic team, great traditions there, and they are trying to get more white members because it just needs to be more integration.
Is it a case though that, I mean, you go along to a Champions Trophy match, you know, India Pakistan or India against whoever or Pakistan against whoever, and the South Asian community who live in Britain just prefer to support India or support Pakistan or support Bangladesh or Sri Lanka,
or of course Chennai Super Kings or, you know, Mumbai Indians? Yeah, I mean, it's not an easy issue to deal with, is it? But the disappointment is that you look at a county like Middlesex, for instance, who don't have many Asian players, and yet there are so many Asian cricketers in London, and you just feel that our game could move on. You know, we're searching around for a spinner, for instance, and they are natural spinners, a lot of these Asian boys and girls. Amar Verdi is playing, obviously, for Surrey now and looking talented. Is he the kind of example of someone that we've missed for the last 10 or 15 years? So why are we talking about this? Well, the fact is that the NACC, the National Asian Cricket Council, are announcing a big initiative this week. Wasim Khan, the chief executive of Leicestershire, is heavily involved with this community as well. And the announcement is a sort of 11-point plan to try and get much better integration between the South Asian community and the traditional English cricketing community. And Gulfraz Riaz, who is the chairman of the NACC, explains how that might work.
One of the facets of trying to understand why South Asian cricketing communities are not going into the professional game, we felt there isn't anybody in the middle. So an ex-professional that played the game, like Kabir Ali or Awais Shah, for example, these guys, having played the game and been professional, obviously, for many, many years. So last year, we, National Asian Cricket Council, got a select group of Asian lads, and Steve Kirby at the MCC Young Cricketers was very kind to allow us to play a pre-season friendly. And we discovered from that a guy called Kashif Ali from Luton, a top-order batsman, bowls a bit of leg spin. And the long and short of it was that he was on Essex's book as an academy player, but really wasn't going anywhere. And having spent a bit of time with him, we soon realised that actually, hell of a talent, but actually the soft skills, all the things that Simon would know being a professional, were missing from his element of his game.
Meaning what? So, you mean fitness and stuff?
Yeah, no, fitness was amazing. You know, he, in the beep and the yo-yos, he's just done 20.4. So he was very, very, and is very, very fit. His soft skills were communication, being very shy, very kind of introvert. The soft skills of communicating, being isolated from his teammates, timekeeping, discipline, etc. So a lot of things that were almost non-cricket related. So we felt that actually, from an NACC point of view, he would be a very, very good, not a project, but a guy to mentor. So I took on that role as mentoring him. And fast forward a year, he's now a Category A player with Kent in his first year as Y6. So he's predominantly playing Kent's 11 at the moment. But what really fascinating is that, you know, his role as a very, very talented young kid has been almost moulded, because I had a relationship with Steve Kirby and I've got a relationship with Min Patel. And I think that's what's been missing over the years, that there hasn't been anybody in between the talented Asian community to tell them what the soft skills are. And Simon, you're absolutely right. Although Kashif is a very, very fit lad, a lot of the South Asian cricketing community talent isn't related at the end of the day to bowling, batting. It'll come down to fitness, attitude, you know, strength and conditioning, diet and all that. And that's where they probably fall over. So the mentoring side of it is something that is actually in this strategy paper, and we feel that actually is two-pronged. One, that you find somebody from within the communities who has a relationship with, for example, the YCs or Kent in my case. But also, we would like to see the ECB and the county boards promote South Asian professionals who have been in the game and retired. And I think Warwickshire have got a good model at the moment where Kadir Ali and Mo Sheikh are looking after one of their county age groups.
So that's Galfrez Riaz, chairman of the NACC, the National Asian Cricket Council. And there's big moves ahead to try and get that integration better, to try and get more coaches from the Asian community working with all sorts of clubs and schools and obviously counties as well. I mean, I was at a girls' game yesterday, Warwickshire against Middlesex women, and I talked to the Warwickshire women's coach there, and he said, you know, quite a lot of Asian kids, boys and girls, are playing for the age group teams for Warwickshire, but they're not fit enough, they haven't got the right diet, they don't turn up on time sometimes, and there's just been this problem with how to groom someone to be a really top class cricketer and all the sort of boxes that they have to tick now, and hopefully this initiative is going to help that process.
So this really is about the ECB recognising that there is this vast swathe of interest, a fanatical interest in the game and talent as well, and trying to say at last, right, come on, let's have a partnership. Let's not be separate. Let's have a partnership.
Yeah, and you know, it's a wonderful thing if it can work, because you've got this, you're preaching to the converted, aren't you? You know, I remember going up to Bradford actually once and going to some schools, and I can't even remember why I was there. But, you know, talking to these wonderful kids, Bangladeshi kids, Pakistani kids, who's your favourite player? And it was always, you know, Sachin Tendulkar, Rahul Dravid, sometimes Shane Warne because he was a spinner, you know, but they never ever mentioned English players. And, you're just dying for them to want to be, to emulate one of the English players, whether it's a white player, whether it's an Asian player. You want them to emulate English players and try and aspire to play for England.
So are you saying that Asian origin players have played for England in spite of the system in the past?
I think we've been lucky to have, some have just made it through. Someone like O.A. Shah, for instance, I think, who partly had Mark Ramprakash as a sort of icon, and Ramps was the first Asian player that had really come through Middlesex ranks, although he was sort of half West Indian in a way as well, because his father's actually Guyanese. But O.A. Shah was, I think, inspired by Ramprakash, and actually we all thought he was Ramprakash at some points, the way he played. So they need those sort of role models to focus on, and there weren't any. Hopefully there'll be more.
So that initiative is going to be announced this week, and also this week Ireland play their first test match against Pakistan. We wish them well. What's your sense about how that game's going to go? Could it be a really tough experience for Ireland, or do you sense they'll give a good account of themselves?
I think that they'll they nearly beat Australia actually in a one-day game about 3 years ago, which I went to, but they just haven't got enough quality in the end. I think the batting will get found out by the Pakistani bowling. I'm sure the Pakistani batsmen will struggle. Someone will get runs to get them to a sort of 180, 200 target. But their bowlers are just going to be too hot for Ireland to handle.
Yeah, there's still some talent in that Pakistan batting lineup. Azhar Ali, of course, an experienced player. Asad Shafiq, who made 100 at Northampton. I suppose the one question is, have they had enough preparation time against the red ball in UK, Irish conditions going into that test match, and what sort of pitch are they going to face in that game? And that's going to be the unknown, that's going to be the tricky test for them. It'd be great, actually, if it was a decent game of cricket as well, just a tight game of cricket.
Yeah, but Graham Gooch's old line, fail to prepare, you prepare to fail. I mean, the problem, of course, is Ireland won't have much preparation either, because they haven't had a proper first-class match together as a team, and they don't play much first-class cricket. So the long form of the game is going to seriously challenge them. Anyway, we'll see what happens. Don't forget, this podcast is in association with The Cricketer magazine, and you can get 20% off your subscription to The Cricketer magazine by going to www.thecricketer.com/podcast and subscribe to that. New issue out in a couple of weeks' time.
And if whoever you get your podcast from allows you to do this, please do rate this podcast and leave comments. We'd like to invite you as well to our Facebook page, The Cricket Analyst. Anyone can join.
Please join, and thanks for listening, and we'll speak to you next week.
Social Podcast Network.